dbkmediaservices.com.
Listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, Derek Webb, and Bruce Knox.
Hello there, sports fans, wherever you may be and whatever you may be doing at this time, but welcome in to episode 179 of SVC Sports Talk. I am Bruce Knox, and with me two young men who I'll introduce just after I tell you that this episode is brought to you by Triple Crown Family Fun Center. All kinds of fun under one roof, and they are our billboard sponsor. We appreciate their sponsorship over these many years. It is a great place to have a party. There's no less than 17 different inflatables for rent, although right now that rental is probably not occurring given this lovely weather we've been having. The place is located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way, just right off Bridge Street behind the Hampton Inn. You can give them a call, 740-773-PLAY. That's 740-773-7529. Look them up on the web, www.TripleCrownFamilyFunCenter.com. And whatever you do, please tell them that Shane and the SVC boys from SVC Sports Talk gave you an idea to give them a contact. We'd appreciate that. Well, gentlemen, I'll introduce these two young men that are seated right and left of me. First, Shane Combs of SECSports.com. How are you, Shane?
Doing really well, Bruce. I know my mom and dad had taken my nephews in there last night at the Triple Crown and spent a few hours and a few bucks.
Yeah.
And, you know, they talked real high of it today. Some good entertainment, some good food. So, yeah, that's exciting to see what they've done in there at the place. And we certainly do appreciate all their support.
And we really do. And then over on this side, one Mr. Derek Webb. Mr. Webb, how are you?
Good, Bruce. Glad to be back this week and ready to get going.
I heard a good thing about you. You became an uncle over the weekend, or over the week.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
My sister had a little boy named Caden, and he's got me wrapped around his finger already. So.
Oh. Well, that is cool, and it makes you feel older, doesn't it? More mature now.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, you look like
I don't know more mature. Just older, right?
You look like you're carrying yourself much more regally throughout the.
It's probably because of all the calls I've gotten this week from some of our fans that the Gazette made a change with our coverage, and our deadlines have moved up to 6:30 p.m.
Uh-oh.
So every game that I've went to, they don't run in the next day's paper. So I've been answering the phone all weekend long with, you know, kind of upset customers that I didn't have any of the decision in that to let everybody know out there. So that's probably why I'm walking that way, is just kind of, I'm just tired.
Not due to your popularity, huh?
No, not at this point.
Well, before we get into the agenda that we had planned here, we've had a couple issues that have come up over the past 24 hours, and many of them have concerned game management, is what we're going to call it. And we wanted to kind of talk and kick this around from side to side here first. Shane, we'll let you talk about what occurred and your thoughts on game management here.
Well, it kind of lends itself back to a discussion we had on SBC Sports Talk. I can't remember, guys, what it was. It seemed like 2-3 weeks ago, where we were talking about a lot of things from scores table to behavior of coaches and PA announcing and some different rule changes. And we talked about some officiating and some different things. Well, we've been getting some consistent feedback, and the discussion's been pretty neat. Well, obviously, over this past weekend, we thought the big time headline was going to be Uniota visiting Miami Trace in terms of on the court, mm-hmm. from a basketball perspective. But late last night, early this morning, my phone, I know Derek's phone, email, some conversation. Obviously, a situation down at Peebles last night was, we'll call it unique. And Derek might be able to give us more details in terms of what he's been asked to report, or again, all you can do is report what you've been told. But I guess my thing is, what comes to my mind is I feel like I can wear two different hats here just because Paint Valley's involved. You know, on one hand, if I'm just a complete Paint Valley fan, which obviously in that matchup I am, I want Paint Valley to win the game. A free throw situation of 27-4 or whatever the technical situation might have been is very frustrating, because you lose by six and you have a chance to get a very valuable win a week before the sectional draw. But then there's another side of me, guys, that is someone who does the website, is someone who's in coaching, is someone who is in education, where I really have to just question game management and you know, the overall crowd control and the overall control of the game, you know, between the lines, and how that affects the overall atmosphere. And obviously that I wasn't there, so again, to be fair, I'm going on hearsay, but it just seems like that was pretty poor, and that's really unfortunate. I know we've had several instances throughout multiple conferences that I've been studying here the last couple weeks where, you know, a different crowd control issue or a different you know, handling of situations have been different, but this one certainly seems a little bit crazy. And I guess, you know, Derek, I'll ask you. I know that you've been even more so involved, maybe with some direct sources from the actual event, where maybe I've been trying to talk more from a Paint Valley perspective. Maybe you've been able to hear some multiple perspectives, just some of your take, not only on that instance last night, but the big issue that this is becoming really around the Southeast Ohio here lately.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I'll start here. I you know, on Tuesday night I went to Upper Arlington to see Chillicothe play, and the difference in officiating is very, very it's evident. They let kids play, they let kids go. It's a rougher type of a game, and then you'll see a game here in the Southeast side of Ohio, and it's touch fouls. You know, you put your hands on a kid and it's foul. You go up into Columbus, and really, if you think about it, you know, I noticed this last year during the tournament as well. Some games and some sites are ref differently than you see throughout the season. Mm-hmm. So not only does it hurt our teams because they're used to playing under, I don't know whether to call it weaker foul calls, or you know, I don't want to disrespect the integrity of any referee.
No. You're just giving a perspective of two different areas where you've had a chance with your job to travel out of the area a little bit, right?
Right, and trust me, referees have one of the toughest jobs. You could not pay me enough to do it. However, you know, I do believe that even just as a sports fan and as a media guy, even just kind of like to watching good basketball, you know, there needs to be some consistency. Not just in Central Ohio or you know, Southwest Ohio, but in Southeastern Ohio as well. That way, when our say we have a team that, you know, goes really far in the tournament, say we have a Uniota down at the Convo, and you know, they get into a district final game, you know, I want them to play under the same type of conditions as they would at home against Southeastern, because that's, you know, if you're not used to a physical game, it's going to hurt your game plan. So I would say that about the officiating. You know, it's very inconsistent when you go to other parts of Ohio. You know, and as far as Paint Valley and Peebles go last night, I mean, you know, I got a text from Paint Valley's coach Dave Shoemaker last night. You know, he had said six technical fouls and two entire sections of a gym, including a woman and a baby, were thrown out. And I just thought, you know, I read that text message, like, okay, this is a prank. Like, Ashton Kutcher's going to come out sometime.
I was trying to figure out, like, well, hold on. You can't leave the baby, right? I mean, the baby has to go too. If you're going to kick the section out, we got to go ahead and send the baby home.
But, you know, I don't think I've ever seen that. I don't think I've ever seen two entire sections of a gym ejected at the same time. I tweeted out, I said, you know, I was at Miami Trace last night to see Uniota play. I should have been at Peebles. I saw a great basketball game, but my goodness. But, you know, I'll say this, Shane. You know, I told you this, you know, kind of pre-show, kind of talking. There were three technical fouls for 100% sure given out, and that was to Coach Shoemaker, an assistant coach, and then Dylan Swingle. And I will say this. I have watched Dylan Swingle play numerous times, and I have never seen Dylan lose his cool on the basketball court. And there have been kids hanging off of his jersey. There have been kids tackling him to the ground. And he's never lost composure. For Dylan to say something, to me, that there's something that was going on bigger than just fouls. I'll say that. And that's not me being biased. I don't have a dog in the fight. I graduated from Chillicothe. So I don't, you know, I had no, it doesn't matter to me who won that game last night. But I will say the Dylan Swingle is a class act. And for him to say something to a referee really tells me all I need to know. I also heard, I don't know if you heard this, Shane, but in Adams County, there's a $100 or $150 fine for getting thrown out of a basketball game. I didn't know that until last night. Coach Gene Bumgarner from Piketon had tweeted that out. And I was like, well, wow, Adams County made a lot of money tonight. but like,
does, when you have does the baby get charged?
Yeah, that's exactly. How does that happen? Is that like, do they get a discount? But no, when you have a 27-4 free throw advantage, yeah, I mean, that sounds fishy to me.
Well, and the only thing I'll say real quick too, Bruce, in all seriousness, from a coach's perspective, it, you know, as a coach, you're always educating yourself. You're always watching. I know we live in a different time now with social media. I'm amazed throughout, not just the SVC, all over Ohio, you'll see it's commonplace just to see different videos of plays.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see a game winner here. I mean, I saw where the other night a kid from Uniota hit a JV winner where they hit a big shot in a game and stuff. It's on Facebook. Yeah. But you'll see a last second call. Was this a foul? Was this not a foul or whatever? And it's just that's different. That's something in the high school game that, you know, you didn't deal with 10, 15 years ago. And that's an interesting dynamic too, when we talk about not just game management, but how we evaluate some of these things, that the OHSAA is going to have some interesting decisions to make moving forward, because that's a different dynamic that is obviously here to stay and is only going to grow.
Yeah. With the advent of things like Huddle, which is a site that that teams use a lot to capture the video images and the audio images of a game, wouldn't you have the better ability to evaluate what happened in something like that?
Well, I think so, but I mean, even think about like what some of the things I enjoy is Derek and Brock do an awesome job of this. If they're coming up on a key point in the game, like if it's a tied game with, you know, 30 seconds to go or whatever, they'll start running their phone.
Yeah.
And they're going to start running the video. Well, that way, if there's a game winner or a tough call or whatever, and you're not at a game, well, someone like me, you know, that's awesome. I get to see the video. I get to see the play. What did the coach, you know, I'm looking at, hey, what did the coach run? Who took the shot from where? What's the situation? So, but it also lends itself to, you know, if there's a foul on a not with 5 seconds to go, it's right out there for everybody to see. So, you know, it's just, again, it's just a new time period that we live in, that, you know, those things are going to be out there. And the fact that it doesn't have to come from a coach, or it doesn't have to come from a Derek Webb, it could just come from whoever in the stands that wants to put a video out there of, hey, is this a foul? Or, yeah, this was called a foul, or, hey, there's a technical, or whatever it might be. That's what's ironic, and that's really kind of hard to police if you think about it, when it comes to, you know, people in the stands just with today's technology.
Yep, it sure makes a bunch more reporters, doesn't it, in a way?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll hear more about this. I just have a sneaking suspicion that there will be other topics that we'll tackle coming up in the future. But, Derek, you did have several important trips to Miami Trace over the past few weeks, and what have you learned about a few of our elite SVC teams, such as the Uniota boys and the Southeastern girls, heading into the tournament?
Yeah, well, with Chillicothe being there twice over the past couple of weeks, I feel like Miami Trace is in my coverage area. I've been there 4 times in 2 weeks now. So, but, you know, when it comes to Southeastern girls who beat Miami Trace 54-50, you know, for me, that was the night where I really thought, okay, Southeastern, they're for real. And that's no disrespect towards them, but we all saw them against Wheelersburg that first game, and we thought, okay, same old Southeastern. They're going to go in the tournament. They'll win the SVC, but they'll go in the tournament, you know, and lose in a district semifinal, district final. You know, kind of like last year, kind of like what we saw last year. But when they beat Miami Trace that night, I thought, this team is on a, they're, you know, the train's rolling. Mm-hmm. And then they go and beat Uniota twice, and they play a couple close games where they learn when they don't have to beat somebody 60-20. You know, they're learning how to win. You have a great senior in Audrey Wheeler, but I also learned that Callie Mitten can run the point guard position. She is just about as valuable as Audrey or Ella, and you don't see that because she doesn't score 30 a game. You know, she runs the offense. There's a lot of the things that go through her that, you know, just the casual basketball fan doesn't see. And that night at Miami Trace, she really took over that game. And at the end of that game, really won the game for them at the free throw line and kind of distanced that, you know, had that 4-point distance at the end. Then as far as Unyota goes, I mean, you know, Unyota showed kind of what we knew. Mm-hmm. You know, they can compete with the top Division II teams in our district. However, you know, they did not get the win there. They lost 68-61 Saturday night, but they had a 17-18 three-point lead or something like that in the first quarter. Took a big effort from Logan Swackhammer and a big effort from Peyton Hill, but they did it. Brandon Kennedy in that game scored, I think it was 3 or 4 points. I think it maybe five. I'm not sure. I think
he took 4 shots is the big stat that jumped out at me. Yeah.
And that's, you know, I've always said if you want to beat Unyota, you deny Brandon Kennedy the ball. And that's what Miami Trace did last night. And you got to think, though, you think back to Unyota's wins this year, Swackhammer, Hill, and Kennedy are scoring.
Mm-hmm.
So, to me, if Brandon Kennedy scores during that game, Miami Trace loses, and Unyota's probably the
4
one seed.
4 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, was held to just 3 field goal attempts is what I had on my sheet. Yeah.
So, I mean, there you go. I mean, there's your answer. I mean, you know, Brandon Kennedy has to shoot the ball for Unyota to win. And that comes from not my mouth, but that comes from Matt Hoops' mouth. You know, one of his quotes earlier this season was, when Brandon Kennedy plays well, we play well. And, you know, last night it wasn't that Brandon Kennedy didn't play well. Is that he didn't get to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if he gets to shoot and, you know, Shane, if Unyota doesn't turn the ball over 20 times, Unyota may win that game. And they may have a number one seed in the tournament. But I told Matt Hoops last night after the game, and you know, he agreed, I think we may see a different game if Unyota and Miami Trace meet up in the Division II tournament. It's at a neutral site. You're not playing on the road. You know, the kids know what to expect now, and they know when you're up 18-3, keep your foot on the gas pedal.
Yep.
Yeah.
Shane, later in the show, we're going to talk about the girls' sectional bracket, and next week we'll talk about the boys' sectional bracket. But with this in mind, what's your overall level of confidence as a fan of the league for our boys and our girls entering the second season?
Well, you've heard me say before, guys, that, you know, postseason's a lot about matchups. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you're talking a one-and-done format, you know, a lot of times you could throw out the brackets one way and you could get 5 or 6 sectional champs per boys and girls. You could throw out the brackets a totally different way, and that number could cut all the way down to 1 or 2. So matchups is really the big key. Ignoring the brackets for just a second on the girls' side, because we obviously know what they are, and then not even predicting what the brackets are going to be on the boys' side, just to answer the question on level of confidence, you know, I would say I feel pretty good. I mean, I think on the boys' side, obviously Unyota are very talented. But what we have on the Division III side is we at least have teams that, even though they certainly have some weaknesses, they certainly have some holes, you know, they're all at that 9-10, 11-7, 7-12, 11-9. But all of them, even down to Huntington, Southeastern, Westfall, all of them have played so many close games. And a lot of times in the tournament, you know, you'll see a lot of games get into the middle of the third quarter, and it really comes down to a 9-minute sprint to the end of who can execute, who can get a stop, who can do different things. And all of our teams on the boys' side are certainly battle-tested. And then as I go to the girls' side, again, obviously girls' basketball is really, really good in the Southeast District. When you start getting to the sectional final level, and then especially if you're lucky enough to advance down to Waverly, you're looking at some really, really good teams. There's no such thing at all as a cupcake, really, in the sectional final for the middle seeds. But for any seed, there's no cupcake at all from the district semifinal on. You're going to play a team in the district semifinal that could easily be an Elite Eight, Final Four type of team, probably across the board. That's just the way it is. But, you know, when I look at especially those top six teams in our league, and Dean and Westfall have obviously shown some great improvement here down the stretch. We've talked about it before. Out of conference, they've been pretty solid. You have six teams now that have double figure, or five teams that have double figure wins overall. So, yeah, I mean, confidence wise, I feel like the league is at least battle tested and ready. As far as actually producing some sectional titles and some district final appearances, a lot of times that comes down to matchups. And obviously, as we'll talk about later, sometimes those matchups aren't always under your control when it comes to the way we vote now in the Southeast District.
And we'll get into that in just a little bit. But with this being Selection Sunday when we're recording this for the girls, it makes sense to make it ladies first this week. So up next, we talk about league standings, finishing up, and the teams preparing for the postseason.
Downtown, walking fast, faces pass and I'm homebound.
Well, Shane, Southeastern finished a league championship this week and will most likely go on this week to win a gold ball. Your thoughts on Southeastern's championship run?
Well, it's been really complete. It's not just what they've done in the league. It's been the fact that, you know, after that tough opening day where, you know, I think a lot of people that really understood what was going on with Southeastern, you had a deep volleyball run, you had a deep soccer run, you had a lot of kids coming in banged up. Audrey Wheeler had just been banged up. It was a question if she was even going to be able to play in that Wheelersburg game. Not to make excuses, Wheelersburg was certainly better on that day. But I think there were certain situations that would tell you that they weren't, you know, 20, 30 points better. But, you know, what Southeastern do is, you know, they've answered with 19 straight wins. And as we said, they're obviously probably going to go on to win the gold ball. And that they have the one tough non-conference game here coming up with North Adams as we're recording on Sunday. But, you know, as far as the championship run, what an impressive group. I mean, you're talking about a group led by Ellis Gaines, as you've heard me say before. You're talking about arguably the best player our conference has ever seen. I mean, when you look at what she's going to accomplish before it's all said and done, you know, and then all of a sudden their second best player is a kid that because of Ella, you've heard me say before, kind of flies under the radar. I mean, you're looking, Audrey's going to easily go over 1,300 points this week, and she's going to chase 1,400 points. Well, I mean, 1,400 points makes you one of the top 16 scores in the history of our conference, and that's their second best player. So, you know, then as they've gotten older, they've started to really mature and compete better on the defensive end. I think that's the biggest thing, their toughness categories, their defensive stops, their rebounding, because those are the things that's going to really come into play as they get to the district level. I mean, from the word go in the district, their district semifinal is going to be brutal. So, I mean, it's going to be really tough, and they're going to have to play a physical brand of basketball. So those are going to be the things that I think really go when you look at them going into Miami Trace and winning, when you see them playing an Amanda, who I think just won their conference, I read on Twitter, when you see them getting to go to North Adams and play some of these different teams, I think that's what, you know, these two late Uniota games certainly don't hurt, because they're going to have to play, you know, probably by the time they're in the district semifinal, they're playing a team that would probably be within the top three of their entire schedule. And that's pretty tough. But, man, what can you say about the run that they're on? And I'm sure they're excited to take on that type of test.
Derek, your thoughts on Southeastern's championship run?
Yeah, I mean, I think Shane said it pretty much perfectly. This is definitely the most complete team in our area. In the SBC, I expect them, as I kind of mentioned before, to really, really compete for a district title. I really think they can. And it's this whole championship season has been leading up to that. And, when they did beat Uniota the Thursday night in overtime, the team was just so energized. And you know, I when I talked to Ella Skeens after the game, I mean, she was jumping up and down with excitement. Mm-hmm. I mean, they really want this, and you can just tell from being around the team that's their goal. You know, they've already won an SBC title. They want that gold ball,
right?
but they know that after that goal ball, they're still not done. I think that's a maturation from last year.
Okay. Well, Shane, next week we will select – man, I can't believe the season's going this quickly, but we'll select our all-league squad for the girls, and we got so few games really having much meaning in the standings this week. Is there anything you're still waiting to see this week to put your list together?
I'll be honest, I don't think so. You know, I could probably give a list tonight, you know, which I obviously won't.
But no, I could probably keep them guessing for another week. Get those ratings up.
I could probably, you know, pretty much put the list together. I think the biggest argument when you look at some teams that have such great balance, like Southeastern from three down, from Uniota 1 through 7, Piketon, you know, 2 through probably 4 or 5, you know, it's very difficult to maybe rank within their own teams. That's probably the biggest thing that I'm looking at. That's where it becomes a very subjective thing of where I might feel a certain way, or Derek might feel a certain way, or this coach might feel a certain way, is probably ranking within. But you know, no, I think we have a pretty good sense of what the league has become, where the teams rank, and I feel pretty confident. You know, Derek, I don't know. You watch a lot of different matchups. I mean, you know, 13 games into the league conference and season, and then when you look on the non-league, I see here, what, 19 to 21 games played. I mean, by now, don't you feel like you have a pretty good sense of where you stand? That's not to say we couldn't get an incredible performance to persuade us this week, but don't you kind of feel like you have a pretty good sense of at least the way you look at it, or no?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I look at the four games, you know, one slate for Thursday to kind of wrap up the conference season. You know, you really almost could predict the winners of those games, especially looking at the past result. So yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I could do it tonight. I won't, because Bruce doesn't want us to.
No.
But yeah, I mean, it's pretty concrete for me. I mean, I think the top five are, you know, pretty cut and dry. And then now, like you said, after that it gets a little hairy, but you know, that top five, that's a solid top five for me. I don't think that's going to change this week.
All right, Shane, let's head then to the girls segment of the Fast Break, if we can.
Yeah, sounds good. We'll go Crown Hill Golf Club as our official sponsor of this segment, as we do each week. All year long, we've been splitting the boys and girls. And Crown Hill Golf Club, you can give them a call, 740-986-4653. I know I've been putting my baseball notes together and doing some coaches meetings. So that means the weather must be close to changing, so you want to make sure you get your golf set up there. Again, that number, 740-986-4653. So, Bruce, if you're okay, let's go with our three question in our girls segment of Fast Break.
We've seen several monster nights in the scoring column in the girls' league this season. Is this a trend you think will continue in the postseason and into next season?
Well, I mean, for me, I would say yes. I mean, you know, I don't see any reason why this would change this season, especially if teams are having success. Well, I mean, you know, you don't fix what's not broke, right? You know, as far as next season, we've got a lot of juniors that are very talented. You look at Elvis Skeens, Lexi Woods. You look at even Braden Collins and Kelsey McDonald, the sophomores. I mean, you know, so I think that we've got a lot to look forward to. I mean, even if you look at the Skeens, I know she put up 40 one night. You know, you look at her, well, with Audrey Wheeler leaving next year, she even has to have that much more scoring responsibility on her shoulders. So, yeah, I mean, I don't look for this to stop. Fun to watch.
Well, guys, I think what happens is it's like a light bulb going off. On the boys' side, you saw it with Dylan Swingle. This week, you're starting to see it with Lexi Woods. She's scored over 30, I think, three of her last four times out or something like that. And, you know, she's up to 1,080 now on the all-time list. And we mentioned Ella Skeens at 1,443. Braden Collins at, you know, averaging over 21 a game, pretty much now to the end of her sophomore year as a first-year varsity player. And, you know, you look, you've seen Ella score 41. You've seen Braden score 34. Lexi's had 33 and so forth. So 34. And she, you know, some pretty impressive numbers. So the only thing I might say to pay attention to, that's a little trickier to do in the tournament. A lot of times teams will come out hard with a game plan to really try to take away that first option. But sometimes some of these kids score in so many different ways that they're hard to stop. But yeah, going into next year, when all these particular kids are a year better, I wouldn't see why the answer wouldn't be yes. You'd expect it to continue.
Which team's position on the bracket could lead to a great tournament run?
Honestly, I think it's Southeastern. I know we've talked about them, but they're going to await a 7-10 in Wellston and New Lexington. Then they'll have to play Ironton or Chesapeake in a district semifinal. Now Ironton, obviously, last year going to the state. I think it's the state. I know they were in the Final Four. They lost some of their big scores. Of course, if Ironton gets beat by a 6 seed, I think Southeastern's got that taken care of in Chesapeake. So I honestly expect them to get to a district final. It's there where they really challenged if the bracket plays out by an Eastern Brown team, which would be a great game. But I honestly think that they'll be at that level in a district final. Not going to say they're going to breeze there, but for the first couple of wins, I can see Southeastern winning by 8 to 10 point margins.
Well, Ironton Chesapeake certainly going to produce a quality opponent there, but I would have to say I agree with Southeastern if we're talking about a tournament run, meaning like Sweet 16 level, because, again, Southeastern's probably the only team that can play at that level. I certainly think Piketon can win a sectional title. I certainly think Paint Valley can win a sectional title. So as I look, Uniota will compete for a sectional title, but again, that Division II is a bear. It's really, really difficult. Southeastern would be the team just because the level you have to play at when you go to Waverly. The couple times I know we've advanced there and played the likes of Ironton and Fairland, who went on to the Final Four in those respective years, it's a high, high level of basketball.
What is your overall opinion of the voting procedure, and do you think it produced a fair outcome for the Southeastern District?
To answer the first question, I hate the voting procedure. I'll just be honest with you. I know that they've converted everything online now, and so these coaches can go online and kind of rate a team lower than where they're probably supposed to be rated, I guess, by many's opinions, without ever having to face that coach sitting the next to them face to face ahead from across the table. Going to the online voting procedure, I don't understand why all the coaches can't just get together on a Sunday at Jackson High School like they used to and hash it out. Maybe it took 6-7 hours, but hey, you got it done, and nobody probably left like they felt like they were slighted. I'm sure there was instances of that, but I know that there's more in talking to the coaches now that it went online. I'll give them this. However, looking at the bracket this year, I hate the matchups where the SVC plays the SVC, or whatever in any conference where a conference team plays a conference team in the first round of the tournament. This year that didn't happen. Last year we had Piketon and Huntington playing for a sectional final in the first, that's their first game out to shoot. So this year that didn't happen. And so, in this case, I'm okay with it. But usually that does happen. And I have a problem with that.
As far as the first question goes, the overall opinion of the voting procedure, I would say in the last couple of years, it's gone from bad to worse. And as far as the second question goes, do you think it produced a fair outcome for the Southeast District? I would say it depends on what conference you're from.
Okay, that is our fast break, the girls segment brought to you by Crown Hill Golf Club. Give them a call. The weather is going to change for the better, although as we sit here today, it's, 50 degrees outside and it's supposed to be winter and I'm kind of disappointed, but
we could be playing golf right now.
That's exactly right. We could be up there at Crown Hill Golf Club. So give them a call and tell them Shane and the boys at SVC Sports Talk sent you. Well, guys, I would be remiss, particularly given that last question. It seems like we talk each year about the procedure and the voting, and with all these recent changes, it seems like there's a little bit more there to discuss, Shane. Your thoughts on this? Your answer was almost telling, I think, though.
Well, I mean, I tried to be as fair and as honest in my answer there as I can be. The procedure is just not very good. It used to be somewhat flawed. Now it's just ridiculous. I mean, it used to be you had some of these. This conference outnumbers this conference, but as Derek said, you at least had to go to Jackson. You at least had to come out in the lobby there and and look each other in the eye or try to avoid one another, whatever. And then if you're going to do it, you had to walk into the room.
Yeah.
You had to sit in a small classroom, and you had to be willing to say the names at the number allowed. That's not to say it still didn't happen, but it certainly made it a little bit more difficult and certainly kind of policed it a little bit better. Where now you just go on the computer, and as we found in multiple sports, not only is it easier just to do whatever you want, but it's also sometimes people have made just technology mistakes. I know in other sports we've had mistakes just where new coaches or obviously it's new to all coaches didn't quite understand how to properly submit the vote, which can influence a vote. So it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense in terms of the procedure. And then as far as the fair outcome, again, it just matters what conference you're in. Sometimes, you know, if you're in a room with 10 and there's six from a conference and they submit six votes, say for today's vote, let's say there's six people in the room and they submit the exact same list. Well, that's pretty much going to trump the room, you know what I mean, in terms of across the board there, at least in terms of the majority, in terms of where people are going to be placed. Here's probably the most telling story I can give. I won't say the person, but I had someone say to me earlier today, I mean, this person knows very, very little about the basketball procedure of it all. I mean, they probably don't know who plays point guard for Southeastern compared to who's playing quarterback for the Falcons tonight. So like it's they're looking at a bracket, and they said, the only thing that confuses me, Shane, is why in like when they're all Division III, like why sometimes when I see a six seed, might they have say 13 wins? And in some other instances on the same exact division or bracket, I'll see a six seed with like eight wins. Or why does a five seed have 13 wins where somewhere else they might have eight wins? You know, that's a pretty good observation. Yeah. I tell them, it's like, because you're able to look at a piece of paper and in 2 minutes, you're able to figure out something that our Southeast District Board hasn't been able to figure out in how many years now?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and what's frustrating is if only we could come up with a different way to do it. But then I say, oh yeah, we could look and see like how every other district around does it. You know what I mean? It's just not that hard. It's just not. And that's the frustrating thing, you know, not just for a coach, not just for a player, but really for the fans involved and for the different situations. I have no idea why we don't finish the year. First of all, this playing after the draw makes no sense to me. Why with technology today, we can't play the whole season and then do this if we're going to use this technology the way we are. And then on top of that, why we are separating into these different sectionals still in 2017, just makes for some tough situations. But it certainly puts our conference into some tough situations throughout. And I'll just kind of leave it at that. But it's certainly something that I hate for coaches to stop talking about, because I'm afraid if we ever just stop talking about it, then it'll never get fixed. So I at least think it's our duty, especially me as a coach that has a platform like SVC Sports Talk now in our 6-year, 179 shows, where I know a lot of people throughout, not just the SVC listen, but a lot of areas. I hate not to talk about it each year, because I don't want it to ever lose its momentum or lose its need to be discussed.
Well, Shane, could we ask for some feedback from the fans on that one as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, tell me I'm wrong. Tell me I'm an idiot, whatever. It's just, I've been doing this a long time in two or three different sports, and that's just kind of how I feel about them.
How's idiot spelled again? No, I'll look that up. Okay. Well, we'll move on here. We want to give a shout out to C&K Athletic Equipment, being one of our sponsors that has been with us for probably a couple of years now, I believe. And you can find them on the web, of course, at www.cnkathleticequipment.com. They are your source for local school apparel, all kinds of sports equipment, including headwear, other sports accessories, and some fitness gear as well. Located at 116 East High Street in Circleville, 740-477-9828. And they are open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday, 9 to 12, and they're closed on Sunday. We appreciate them. Give them a call or look them up on the web and see what they can help you out with. Well, we're going to turn our attention now, Shane, to the boys. And who did you view as the big winner this past weekend?
Well, I guess, Derek, when I look at the boys' side, if you're talking about big winners, I guess the two things that we're still really looking at are how are they going to jockey for position, you know, two through six in the league there, two through five, and then how does that influence the Division III sectional? I think we would all agree that those are probably the two headline things that we're looking at down the stretch. So with that in mind, you know, Piketon certainly had a big weekend as they moved to 8-4 now, and they're up to 9-10 overall. But again, Edina has to come away. That Paint Valley Edina matchup was really, really big in terms of that's the difference between them splitting head to head and now Edina instead sweeping the season series with that comeback win. Give them a lot of credit on the road down. I think they said 17 at one point, mm-hmm. coming all the way back. So. Edina now at 11-7. That probably separates them enough, even with the Piketon losses, with Piketon being 9-10 and Piketon only being up one in the league standings. That probably, in my mind, puts Edina ahead of them, but it'll be interesting to see how the coaches vote it. And then Zane Trace becomes an interesting team because they're 7-5, but see, in the overall, they're only 7-12. So how's that going to play out? Paint Valley at 11-9. But I guess, Bruce, I would say Edina is probably the big winner, getting to 11-7, although Piketon certainly did the same thing, picking up their non-league win as well, coming back toward this 500 mark. But 8-4 in the league certainly makes it interesting with just a couple to play. I guess, you know, Derek, I know you were outside the SVC on Friday night and then had a chance to see Unioto, but obviously you follow closely what was going on there with the four SVC games. Brock had great updates for us from Bainbridge. Just your thoughts on big winner. Would you agree that those are the two headlines to follow right now? And who did you see coming out as the big winner this weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have to agree with Edina and Piketon getting two wins there. You know, and Edina beats a Paint Valley team that a lot, you know, even I thought that was a surprise to me with the way Paint Valley's been playing. I kind of thought that Paint Valley would win that game. And then, of course, Edina comes out and, you know, gets the job done. So they would be one of my winners. And then you look it over at Piketon and, you know, they get a win over Huntington, who has played Piketon close twice now. Huntington has, which is a mystery to me, because Huntington will go. The whole SEC this year, Shane, is a mystery to me. So on some nights, but Piketon beats Huntington, and then they go to West Union and get a 13-point win. So yeah, I mean, I would absolutely agree with that. I would have no reservations at all.
Well, let's kind of flip the question here, then, Derek, and we'll start with you. Who hurt their standing the most in the league, as well as the tournament draw?
You know, to me, in the league, I'm going to go with two different teams here. In the league, to me, it's Paint Valley. I mean, they dropped two spots, and they go down to, 6-6? Is that correct?
Yeah, 11-9.
So they go down to 6-6 in the league, and then they drop below both Zane Trace and Edina, who win. So, you know, that would be the biggest in terms of the SVC standings. In terms of tournament draw, I mean, I don't know how you don't go with Unioto. I mean, if they beat Miami Trace on the road at Miami Trace last night, they're probably that team that gets that number one seed in their sectional. And that's what Matt Hoop said after the game last night. He said, you know, with Chillicothe, who I was at Miami Trace again Friday night, with them losing on Friday night to Miami Trace, you know, it really kind of pitted Unioto and Miami Trace against each other with that number one seed on the line. And he had told me that before the game, him and Rob Pitzer, Miami Trace's head coach, had gotten together, and that's what they were talking about. You know, they kind of thought whoever wins this game will get a number one seed. And so, you know, in a tournament sense, I mean, I'm not saying Unioto can't make a run as a two or a three, but as a one, obviously it's a little bit easier.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point on Uniota. The Division Two is so brutal that I don't know that it'll be, you know, maybe other than your first round opponent, where the bottom of the Southeastern sectional is probably a little bit weaker than the bottom of the Logan sectional. But if you go to Athens, no matter what seed you come out of, you're going to be playing a really, really good team. That Division II is really loaded. I guess on the boys for Division III, unfortunately, if I'm being fair, I have to go with my Bearcats there at Paint Valley. I mean, it's, you know, they had a chance to join that 7-5 group. They had a chance to be as high as 13-7 or 12-8. Now they're 11-9. So that's an unfortunate drop. I guess the silver lining for the Bearcats is, you know, you're still a team with a unique player that no one's going to be thrilled to death to play down there at Waverly. So no matter who you play in that particular bracket, you're gonna have an opportunity. You've already beaten Lynchburg head to head this year, who many people feel like is going to be the top seed. So they're very, very capable. To me, guys, even though I don't know where they fit into this question, good or bad, Zane Trace is unique because of the 7-12 overall. I mean, this is a team that, you know, had the pillow injury, but their young kids are growing. That they could be an interesting team to watch too. So really looking forward to seeing how the coaches sort out this Waverly bracket next Sunday.
All right, Shane, time to head to the boys segment of the Fast Break.
All right, let's head right back to Crown Hill Golf Club then. Again, I'll give that number, 740-986-4653. Again, give them a call. Tell them SVC Sports Talk sent you, and tell them you're from the Chillicothe area. Let them know about how many times you think you might want to play, and they'll set you up with a good deal. So, Bruce, if you're okay, we'll go three questions on the boys segment of the Fast Break.
Do you believe the parity in the league is more a sign of quality of teams or just of quantity of average teams?
Well, Shane, if I'm being honest with myself, I don't want to obviously, again, give disrespect to any of our area teams, but I'd say a quantity of average teams. I'd have to go with that one. You know, especially when you look outside, if you look at a Division II, you start watching a Benton County or a Miami Trace or, Fairfield Union, those teams are you watch those teams play, and you don't see some of the same qualities as you do with our teams in our area. However, I'll say this as well. There's a lot of youth in this conference this year. So I think if a couple years down the road, if you're asking me the same question, I might go with the quality of teams, but this year I'd have to go with the quantity of average teams.
No, I think that's fair, Derek. I mean, when we use the term average, sometimes people take that as a negative thing. Sometimes it's just a reality, but the bottom line of it is, you know, Piketon's probably going to end the year with double digit wins, Adena double digit, Paint Valley double digit. So, I mean, that's not easy to do. I mean, winning is hard. And I think what happened is last year's league was crazy, crazy good. Like, this particular Uniota team this year would have had trouble running the table in last year's league. I mean, there were some much deeper teams. You had a Pierce Mowry in the league, a Jonathan Thomas, Corey Wyman was healthy at that point. I mean, there was a much, much different league. So, you know, yeah, I would agree that it's probably the quantity of average teams, but keep in mind, as these teams grow throughout the year, I don't know that I can predict exactly which team it's going to be, but it wouldn't surprise me at all to see one Division III team from the SVC catch fire in the right tournament bracket here in a week or two and make a run to Athens and maybe even win a game.
When looking at tournament basketball, what do you feel our league is lacking that could get exposed in sectional play?
I kind of hit on it earlier. I mean, I'd say officiating. I know I'm picking at the referees, but I'm telling you, you know, over the last couple of years, I've said to myself in the stands a lot when it gets to tournament time, man, they don't call the game like that in SEC play. Or, you know, man, this team can't deal with the physicalness of some of these other teams when they play in the sectional. So that's what I would say. I mean, I would say that, again, the consistency in officiating, it's huge. And until you sit and watch it every single night and then watch the tournament, and I mean different games, different teams, you don't really notice that. It's a glaring difference to me.
Guys, I would say probably completeness – of our starting fives. You know, I think what happens is you mentioned the Pike and Huntington matchup. It got me thinking, Derek. Well, what happens is that's such a nice matchup because they both struggle to guard the post. Well, neither team has post. What happens is a lot of times if they're trying to guard a Uniota front line or a Paint Valley front line, they have to really count on some ball pressure and some different schemes to maybe get the game going in a different tempo. Adina, their front line is kind of new to the varsity level. They're getting a little bit better, but sometimes they're inconsistent in their play. So some of the teams that have great post presence are maybe a little young at guard. Some of the teams that have great guard play, maybe not that big on the front line. Well, what happens in sectional play if you start to run into these top 1, 2, 3, 4 seeds? A lot of times those are the teams that have some of that completeness and that can really catch up with you.
When analyzing the league schedule for the last two games, what are some things for fans to look at in terms of sorting out spots 2 through 5?
Well, you know, I think obviously Dina goes to Zane Trace this Friday, which is two of the teams in that top five. That would be a huge game. You know, Piketon plays Westfall Friday, so, you know, and then Paint Valley also obviously goes to Huntington, who, if you remember, really played Paint Valley tough in Bainbridge. So I mean, that's a losable game for them. If they don't play it to their potential, you could see Paint Valley drop even further in the standings. Since, you know, Huntington's right there, if they could win their last two, Paint Valley loses their last two. You know, you never know. Then of course the next weekend, Uniota plays Zane Trace, which is everybody always looks forward to, and then Paint Valley goes to Piketon. Where they got, you know, kind of I took a beat down the last time they played Piketon at home. So, you know, yeah, there's a lot of shifting around that could happen. Obviously, I still think Uniota wins a gold ball. I kind of look for Adina to take that top two, that second spot.
Well, it's certainly interesting. They certainly have two games that they're going to be favored in. To get to 9-5, although both of those opponents are very capable. You mentioned something about Paint Valley that is interesting. You know, Huntington ends the season with Westfall. If Huntington's able to win head-to-head, now all of a sudden Paint Valley Piketon. But I have a hard time looking past that Paint Valley Piketon. You know, if Adina gets to 9-5, Piketon sitting at the 4 losses, the Paint Valley Piketon game there at the end is really, really intriguing to me. That was a game that got going in a Piketon tempo down there at Piketon. Be interesting to see in Bainbridge if it's a little bit different. So that's certainly a game that Adina will have one eye on for sure, you know, in terms of them looking to get into that two hole.
And that is the boys segment of our fast break, brought to you as it is each and every week by Crown Hill Golf Club. Give them a call and tell them that we guys on SVC Sports Talk told you to do so. I want to mention that, you know, when we're talking about all these different topics, we just covered a little bit ago some thoughts on the selection process and the seeding process and so forth for the brackets. If you've got anything to offer whatsoever about any of that, you can do so by contacting either Shane Combs or Derek Webb, and you can do so by getting a hold of them thusly. First, Derek has an email address. It's dweb@chillicothegazette.com. He is also available on Twitter. At DW1509 is his handle, and he is a great follow. Lots of good sports stuff coming out of that young man, even though he's much more mature now as a result of his uncleship. Shane, on the other hand, he is available through email at admin1@svcsportzone.com. And then he maintains two profiles on Facebook, and he's also a good follow as well at svcsportzone.com on Twitter. You can always leave us a voicemail at DBK Media Services on the listener line, 740-569-3254. We'll forward that along to these two young men as well. And, of course, we ask that you consider subscribing to SVC Sports Talk through a podcatcher, which is an app that will watch our feed for new episodes and notify you and download actually automatically for you, so you don't have to sit around and wait for that. It'll already take care of that. You can also get an email subscription by going to the DBK Media Services website, going to one of the posts, enter your email address, and procedure's pretty easy from there. And then, of course, you can find SBC Sports Talk in the iTunes store. And if you do so, please give us a great rating and a favorable review. We'd really appreciate that. Before we go into the post-game comments, once again, we want to mention C&K Athletic Equipment. They are your local school apparel source for all kinds of fitness gear, sports accessories, headwear, and sports equipment. Located at 116 East High Street in Circleville. Phone number up there, 740-477-9828. You can look them up on the web at www.cnkathleticequipment.com. Open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and 9 a.m. to 12, and closed on Sunday. And we move now into
Bruce, real quick, I just wanted to say to C&K, as a baseball coach, I really appreciate all they do for the Southeast District Baseball Coaches Association. They're absolutely awesome. So I know that most of the coaches listening already know this, but really try to support them in some way. I know right now, the coach myself, you're getting some of your orders in for practice stuff or some different things. I know we all have different people we work with, but if you could throw them a little bit of business, I think it really needs to be known around our area just how much they do to support area baseball. They're outstanding. So I just wanted to throw that in there real quick.
All righty. Well, then heading towards post-game comments, kind of wrapping this stuff up. Derek, you got anything going on this week?
No, not at all. No, I've got things going on each night. Shane mentioned earlier North Adams and Southeastern Girls. That game kind of just a good non-conference game to play before the tournament. I'll be down in North Adams. That'll be my first time in Adams County this year, and as we just talked about in Paint Valley.
You need to make sure you behave.
Exactly. I don't want to have to pay a fine for getting ejected, so I need to – you know, maybe I'll bring Sir Brock Netter down there with me to corral my behavior in. But I've got that Miami Trace and Union Girls on Tuesday, another great game. And then I got Paint Valley. We talked about Paint Valley and Piketon's boys, but I got the girls on Thursday before covering Union and Southeastern on Friday. And of course, that's all sprinkled in with features, columns, question and answers, you know, all that good stuff.
Just a few little things.
Just a few little things. I'm sure there will be some tweets in there, too. I'm not, you know.
Yep, I have a feeling there will be. Shane, SBC Sports Talk's got a lot going on in the next week or two. As far as the podcast, what can listeners look forward to on our upcoming shows?
Yeah, we have some of our most popular shows coming up real quick. I'd throw in there on Derek's work. Really enjoyed the Corey Wyman piece.
Yeah.
Coach Turner there at Southeastern, really good stuff. So, you know, fans, if you haven't had a chance to go back and read those, well worth the read. Good stuff there. Yeah, as far as our shows here, guys, we have some of our most popular shows of the year coming up here over the next couple of weeks. Because not only next week do we talk about the boys' draw, but we release our girls' all-league squad on here. So we'll talk girls' all-league 1 through 15. We'll name our coach of the year. We'll talk some honorable mention. We'll talk about some different reasons why. Then the following week, we'll be in the girls' tournament play, but then we'll be naming our boys' all-league squad 1 through 15 with the coach of the year and some of our reasoning why there. So over the next couple weeks, really, really good stuff that usually some of our highest numbers from those. And then, Derek, it won't be long now, something that you and I really, really enjoy, something we haven't been able to do together yet, is really talk some baseball. Obviously, a lot of pitch count questions are coming in, and I tell them, you know, in response that, hey, patient with us right now. We're going to still talk basketball. We're going to still do some of this stuff, but want to make sure that we let them know that as we turn to the baseball, softball, we'll be talking a lot of baseball pitch count. We'll be talking a lot of softball preview stuff as well. So certainly looking ahead to that, Bruce. So anything else on your agenda, Bruce, before we get out of here this week?
Just one little thing. Just so everyone knows, we're recording this a little early on a Sunday evening, and I don't know what time kickoff is, but the Super Bowl is tonight, I understand. I just caught wind of that not too long ago, and I thought it'd just be appropriate to ask these two sports nerds who they had and what the final score was going to be. So I don't have any fanfares or anything to play before we do the big reveal. But Shane, who do you have and what's the final?
Well, I mean, I guess the smart football pick would be the Patriots, but I'm certainly here in about a half hour not going to be rooting for them. So I'm going to go ahead and I'll go with the Falcons. The Patriots will probably keep them out of the end zone there early, and then I think they'll get in a few times. Let's say the Falcons will end up finding a way to kick a field goal to win it. We'll say 30-27 with a late field goal.
Okay, Falcons 30-27 for Shane. Derek, what say you?
I've got over 1 minute on Lady Gaga's halftime performance, and I will not be watching. I'll be getting pizza or something during that time. Okay. The halftime show is always overblown. Why can't they get Aerosmith or like Guns N' Roses or Poison or somebody to play?
I thought I was the only one that lived in the past, Derek.
I know. I'll take. I'm kind of with Shane here. I mean, I think the Patriots will win. I surely hope they don't. If I was a betting man, that'd be where my money would go. So I'll take New England. I think it's going to be a shootout. I think it's going to be 41-35. I'm going to go with New England.
Okay. 41-35 Patriots for Derek. All right.
That's correct.
Gosh, if that really happens, can you imagine all the Tom Brady stuff we have to listen to the next
time? I know. Number five.
Especially if it's like with 41 points and he throws for like 400 yards.
Yeah. Ugh. Well, then do you think Deflategate will rear its ugly head again? Somehow?
Yeah. A bunch of cheaters.
Oh, that's right. Did you hear that there was a someone? Now, I saw this on the internet, so you know.
It has to be true.
Yeah. Someone suggested that there might have been a drone sighting above the Falcons practice. Now, who knows?
Was it red, white, and blue?
I don't know. Oh. Yeah, and it had Robert Kraft's name on the side or something like that, I think. Yeah. I digress. Anyway, that's going to wrap it up for us, Shane.
Well, no, guys, I do appreciate being flexible with the schedule. I know some of us wanting to watch the game there, maybe some people getting together with some friends and stuff. So certainly appreciate the flexibility. And, again, fans really enjoy this show, but I tell you, we really have two of our best shows of the year coming up, and then don't forget about our spring shows with some of the baseball and softball coverages as well. So, well, guys, until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe, as well as all the other incredible sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and all the people behind the scenes in at DBK Media Services, and for Derek Webb, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportZone.com, where we are 100% SVC. 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.